Good afternoon, everybody. As I mentioned this morning, this morning's presentation was mostly expositional and with little time for comments. This afternoon will be just the opposite. It'll be less time for me speaking, but hopefully the brethren will pick up on it, and we'll pick up, you know, on all three chapters, not necessarily just the third chapter. And we talked this morning about possible themes throughout the book. The three chapters, it's very short, it's only 73 verses, and then that's what that handout's about, and also the divisions. In chapter 3, we can look at it, and potentially the first 8 verses talks of the desolation of Jerusalem, Zion falls into the hands of the enemy. Verses 9 through 17, the call for war. The Gentiles are assembled for judgment. And verses 18 to 21, the land becomes joyous and fruitful. So, as mentioned this morning, this will be rather short relative to what I did this morning. But hopefully, brethren will contribute and pick on the, be able to speak on the individual verses throughout it. For behold, in those days, and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations, and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. History unveils the tragic siege which Judah experienced at the hand of the Babylonians. But Joel's message passes over the event, and in a burst of hope and glory, he reveals the nation's future. He sees the northern army swept aside by God's mighty ones, who not only threshes the nations in the valley of threshing, but also caused the land to spring into fruitfulness. Where there was once desolation, Joel now sees fertility, and the countryside, previously dry and parched, is now fed by springs of living water gushing from beneath the restored and resplendent temple. He likewise describes the people eating in plenty and praising their Elohim, who will at last be in the midst of his people. He portrays the mountains dropping down new wine and the hills flowing with milk with Judah, and Jerusalem remaining from generation to generation. Not only that, but the goodness of God will incorporate willing Gentiles, for the call shall sound long and hard. Whosoever shall call upon the name of Yahweh shall be saved, for in Jerusalem and in Mount Zion shall be deliverance. One can only imagine the effect this closing scene had on Joel himself, as he later would have locked himself away in solitude and quietly contemplated his own message, diligently studying to find the time when deliverance would come to Zion. In Eureka, Brother Thomas wrote concerning the time when deliverance would come in that small section called the Apocalypse in Joel, which I'll now read. He writes, "After predicting terrible calamities upon Israel and their country by the lions of Assyria and others, he consoles the nation with the assurance that after the Gentiles had filled up the measure of their abominations, Yahweh will be jealous for his land and will pity his people, and that they shall no more be made a reproach among the nations. He predicted that Yahweh will do great things at which the children of Zion shall be glad, and that they shall rejoice in Yahweh their Elohim," or Christ, "that he would give them the latter rain of the Spirit, as on Pentecost, of the first month, and the former rain on account of righteousness in the seventh month, which is also the first of the civil year. that in this period there shall be restoration, and that henceforth Yahweh's people shall never be ashamed. He foretold that between the two spirit reign periods, Zion's sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon of her ecclesiastical heavens into blood, before the great and terrible day of Yahweh should be apocalypsed, or revealed upon Israel's enemies, whose destruction shall proceed from Mount Zion and Jerusalem, in which shall be deliverance for the remnant whom Yahweh shall call. He further makes known that in the days of the restoration of Judah and Jerusalem, Yahweh will gather all national armies into the valley of Jehoshaphat, or Armageddon, and there contend with them in the battle for the possession of the Holy Land. That on the eve of this contest, a proclamation shall be made among the nations, stirring them up to the war, which in the apocalypse is styled the war of that great day of God Almighty. That at this epoch of restoration, Yahweh shall lead down his warriors to the conflict in the valley of judgment, that the harvest sickle and the vintage press shall then do their work. That Yahweh, as the Lion of the tribe of Judah, shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and shake the heavens and the earth of the non-Jewish world, whose sun and moon shall be darkened, and the shining of their stars shall be destroyed. That when this is consummated, Jerusalem shall be holy, and no strangers or enemies shall henceforth pass through her any more. That the land shall be as a paradise, flowing with wine and milk, being so rich in vines and pasturage, fountains and running streams. And to crown the whole, Joel testifies with Ezekiel, Jeremiah, and Isaiah, that Yahweh then dwells in Zion, the place of rest, and the city of the great king. End quote. Although we are far removed in time from Joel's day, we see all the signs. We are living in such a privileged time, inasmuch as, you know, we can read this, and we can read it also in the headlines, or see it on the TV news, that this is all coming about. So we nevertheless should be vitally concerned with the prophet's message. The great unfolding drama of chapter 3 is being fulfilled before our very eyes, and the rest of the events are appearing on the horizon. We must therefore quietly contemplate with Joel the stinging rebukes and the glorious pictures of the restoration which God has delivered for our benefit. Now, hopefully now, we'll have much discussion on the various verses and so on. Okay, thank you.